Good morning. So I don't have any relationships to disclose. I want to start with this quote, that resources for mental health are scarce and inequitably distributed between countries, between regions, and within local communities. And I think that my entire talk kind of rests on this statement and makes the point that because of this, there's a lot in common that we have in communities in the United States with communities around the world, and therefore we need to think about these problems from a global perspective, learning from each other and trying to solve problems that have kept both access to care as well as other challenges and mental health issues, kept them as major challenges in global health for quite some time. So I'm going to talk about global mental health and what I'm going to call the new global health. And I'll talk about using community resources for global mental health. The second part of my talk will really focus primarily on what NIMH is doing in our global disparities program. But let me start with a few definitions to make sure that we're all on the same page. So to remind you what global health is, this is a public health audience, so I can go through these quickly. This is an area of study, research, and practice that places a priority on improving health and achieving equity in health for all people worldwide. It emphasizes our interconnectedness and interdependencies, and it stresses social, political, and environmental and economic circumstances in particular settings. And global mental health applies these principles to the domain of mental ill health. Equity and disparity. Equity, of course, is the absence of unfair and or avoidable remediable differences in health among social groups. And a health status disparity is an inequality due to social factors or allocation of resources that is unjust. And then healthcare disparities are differences in healthcare equality, not due to differences in healthcare needs or preferences. And the last definition around globalization just reminds us that globalization represents processes that move our current social condition to one characterized by tight global economic, political, cultural, and environmental interconnections and flows that make our existing borders and boundaries irrelevant. And I think it's always important to remember that we are a part of the globe. What does this mean in the context of mental health? That when we think about mental health in the context of a globalized society, that understanding culture means engaging with issues of poverty, displacement, migration. We have to understand that local economies and communities are affected by global events, and that the social consequences of mental illness can change with these influences. Leslie Swartz, who writes about this, gives an example of South Africa, and as access to water is privatized, people living in townships now pay for water. If you're a person with a severe mental illness who takes a medication that dries your mouth because of side effects, you now no longer have free access to water in the same way. You're someone in the community who may be begging for resources that are highly valued, and this changes the dynamics around stigma and the meaning of stigma around mental illness in these communities. So that's just an example of how these larger influences can affect individuals. Also to remember, the World Health Organization recently published this document on mental health and development. And so when we talk about equity in the context of global health, it's important to remember the inclusion of people with mental disorders and to think about mental health as a part of development. I think this builds on what Dr. Giles was saying in the first session. This document makes the point that people with a variety of mental health conditions meet criteria for vulnerability, that development strategies need to target these populations, and certainly that development programs need to protect the human rights of people with mental disorders and build capacity to participate in public affairs. So I'll say a word about disparities within countries, starting with the United States and then between countries. Again, kind of reminding us of how we need to learn about approaches to problem solving across countries. As you all know, in the most recent census, we see that the United States is becoming a much more diverse country. The Hispanic population grew by 43%, as well as the Asian population alone. We are also a country, we are the largest immigrant receiving country. This is a map that represents the land mass, but the land masses are distorted according to whether countries receive immigrants. The U.S. is one of the largest immigrant receiving countries. In 2009, 1 in 5 people in the U.S. was a first or second generation immigrant. Therefore, our health systems need to address this diversity. Yet, we have persistent disparities in our healthcare system. The graph on my left, which is on the left up there as well, is data from ARC that shows socioeconomic disparities for quality of care. And the red bars represent areas where there's really been no change in disparities, and the blue bars represent worsening disparities. And as you can see, these are looking at ethnic groups across the bottom, black versus white, Asian versus white, American Indian and Alaska Native, and then Hispanic versus non-Hispanic whites. And the final bar are poor people versus high income. So on the majority of indicators for quality, we're seeing either no change or worsening disparities. If you look at the set of graphs to the right, this is looking at access to care measures. And again, this is not such a great picture either. We're seeing primarily that there's not much change with respect to access to care. When we think about mental health and access to mental health care, one of the issues is the availability of providers. This is a map that the quickest way to interpret this map is to recognize that the darkest red areas represent those that have the greatest shortages of mental health care providers. So you can see that there are many areas across the country that are health professional shortage areas with respect to mental health. At the same time, this is a study that was recently published looking at U.S. healthcare expenditures and showing that the U.S. in 2005 is spending much more money on healthcare than many of its peer high-income countries, and yet we are lagging behind with respect to 15-year survival for, in this case, women at the age of 45. So the point from all of this is that we need to be learning about other approaches to this. And in the new global health paradigm, the emphasis is on co-development. How do we continue to improve our health system as we learn from people around the world? And there's an emphasis on bidirectional learning, an emphasis on the importance of research, and I'm calling this a research competence, building on what Nigel Crisp talks about in terms of health competence, meaning that we need to be able to develop meaningful collaborations that rest on these principles of bidirectional learning. And in the context of informing our health systems, we need to have a research workforce that is global and diverse, that provides organized, sustainable research careers, that provides representative cadres of researchers within countries, and provides room for non-traditional paths to research. And we can talk more about that. This is a reminder of all of us that mental disorders are disorders that represent a substantial burden of illness. Oops, if I can get the pointer to come back here. And this peach area, as you can see here, is visible across this slide. And the point I want to make here is that these are problems that are substantial in high-income countries, middle-income countries, and low-income countries. So these are not disorders of wealthy countries. I think this has often been the myth of all chronic diseases, and it's certainly not true of mental disorders, just as it's not true of other chronic health conditions. Despite that burden of disease across countries, you can see this represents spending. The percentage of health budgets allocated to mental health by country. So low-income countries spend a minuscule amount on mental health. High-income countries are still not spending the amount that's proportional to the burden of disease. And when we look at mental health human resources across the world, it's even more striking. The purple bars represent mental health specialists in high-income countries, and you can't even see the blue lines that represent these specialists in low-income countries. So huge, huge disparities across country income groups. This is an example of community care in low-income countries versus high-income countries. Again, there's no representation here of day treatment programs for mental health problems in low-income countries. So huge disparities. So I'll talk a bit about what we're doing at NIMH. The Office for Research on Disparities in Global Mental Health is a relatively new office in the last 2 years that was established to recognize these globalizing influences on health and to think about research needs in the context of new global health. We've been thinking about disparities domestically and disparities internationally in parallel, with our research investments focused firstly on scientific opportunity. How do we solve tough problems with the best research? And then focusing on equity. How do you address the treatment gap in low and middle income countries? And in the United States, how can we begin to quantify mental health disparities to better target interventions for the right communities? Engaging the global mental health community in priority setting to identify what are the priorities, what are the most important areas of research has been one activity. Similarly, we've been bringing representatives from the U.S. Mental health disparities research community together to help us think about what gaps do we need to bridge in that research. And finally, research capacity building has been an emphasis both domestically and globally as well. One of the areas that we have chosen to focus on with respect to global health, which I think has implications for the United States, in that slide you saw with about few mental health care providers, is the growing evidence for the effectiveness of task shifting for mental health in low and middle income countries, showing that providers with more abbreviated training can actually develop interventions or deliver interventions effectively for depression and other disorders. In order to help us think about these equity issues, we brought together a group of people about a year and a half ago to think about what's the best way to get research to actually meet the needs of end users. So how do you make sure that the research that you're doing is going to meet the needs of the service provider working in the field, of the mental health consumer, of that policymaker who's trying to develop mental health services? Out of that meeting came an initiative called the Collaborative Hubs for International Research in Mental Health, which is focusing on establishing research infrastructure in low and middle income countries, research on extending the human resource workforce through task shifting, and those have recently been awarded to a group based at the University of Cape Town, but also working with collaborators in Ethiopia, Ghana, Malawi, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. A second group is focusing on South Asian institutions in Pakistan and India, and a third group focused on Latin America in Chile, Brazil, Argentina, and Colombia. Finally, I talked about global engagement to set priorities. We launched an initiative called the Grand Challenges in Global Mental Health, which was published in Nature this past July. And the goal of this was to bring a diverse community of people, advocates, researchers, and clinicians to identify what are those grand challenges. We had about 422 panelists who did three rounds of a Delphi process to come up with these answers. What are the big challenges? In the final round, these panelists had to rank their choices along four dimensions. How do these issues measure up with respect to disease burden reduction, disparity reduction, immediacy of impact, and feasibility? And I'll just show you briefly some of the outcomes of this. This shows you where the panelists came from. If you look at where people are working, it's a pretty nice distribution of places around the world. An example of the kinds of problems that people identified, this is just one of the responses from the first round. And this is again focused on stigma. People are not accepted in their own family or their own community. Living domestically with a person with mental illness can be difficult unless people understand what's going on, which is why mentally ill people often end up living alone. I won't read this whole thing. But we received over almost 1,600 examples of responses like this, which were distilled down to a list of grand challenges, the top 25 of which were published. And I'll briefly go over the main goals of the grand challenges. First, to identify root causes, risk, and protective factors for mental, neurological, and substance use disorders. We wanted to include all of those since they're often comorbid. To advance prevention and implementation of early interventions, to improve treatments and expand access to care, to raise awareness of the global burden of MNS disorders, to build human resource capacity, and to transform health system and policy responses. Goal E, one of the challenges under Goal E was to increase capacity in low and middle income countries by creating regional centers for mental health research, and we're happy to know that our Collaborative Hubs initiative is actually meeting this challenge. Finally, the top five challenges of this last round were to integrate screening and core packages of services into routine primary care, to reduce the cost and improve the supply of effective medications, to improve children's access to evidence-based care by trained health care providers, to provide effective and affordable community-based care and rehabilitation, and to strengthen the mental health care component in the training of all health care personnel. Our activities have also been important through collaboration. So this is collaboration with the World Health Organization on the Mental Health Gap Action Plan, which again is about how do we implement evidence-based packages for care in resource-poor settings. Finally, as I mentioned, we've been doing a parallel process around disparities research. This was a meeting focused on research in mental health disparities in the United States specifically, which led to two announcements, one of which is currently active for those of you interested in applying, that's trying to understand mechanisms that explain depressive and anxiety disorders across racial and ethnic groups. What are the underlying mechanisms that explain the differences? And I'll stop here. This is the Grand Challenges website if anyone's interested in looking at the results and the supplementary information. Thanks a lot. Anyway, were there any questions? There's one in the back. How that played into, what did you say? I missed the last couple of words. Okay. Well, certainly in this activity, the grand challenges and getting this large group of people to respond to, those issues were raised considerably. And if you actually look at the list of challenges, a number of them focus on how to ensure that you're getting the input of local communities, you're interpreting what needs to happen with respect to mental health services or other kinds of interventions in the context of local communities. So I think that's something that many people around the world are very concerned about. That's a really excellent question. Her question was about often approaches that may be more culturally acceptable are not necessarily part of the evidence base, and how does one reconcile those issues? My sense is that if you are a provider in a clinical setting, you need to use evidence-based, you need to use science-based approaches to care, because we know that, because first of all, you don't want to do any harm, right? That's the most important thing. However, I think most providers do those sorts of adjustments on their own, right? People
gain clinical experience, they may learn to figure out, how do I engage someone in care? How do I bring people in? At the same time, I think that's certainly an area for research, right? It's an area for us to try and understand, how do we make sure that we can engage people in services while ensuring that they are getting what's evidence-based, that they're not getting something that is not actually shown to be effective. Yeah, actually our colleague from SAMHSA may be able to answer that question for you.
Right. Yeah. One of the things we do, let me just quickly say it in 2 seconds, because I know I'm not next, right? Dr. Keyes is next. One of the things SAMHSA is doing right now, my name is Neil Walker, is we're beginning to look at not just evidence-based programs in our NREP, but also place-based programs. Programs inherently workable within the place that it is being used. But I can say more later on.
Ah, that's a very good question. You know, there's a goal that's focused around prevention more generally, and the challenges are actually stated somewhat broadly so that people can take these and formulate the research questions or policy-related responses that they would like to. So there's an entire goal around prevention, which is the second goal. And I think suicide prevention would certainly fall there.